Американская фирма Transceptor Technology приступила к производству компьютеров «Персональный спутник».
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. Maggie has honored me by asking me to sit in for her today when she is away and has given me this wonderful commission to chat today, to discuss today not only voting rights, but the ways in which the Biden-Harris administration has made these kinds of things, the importance of voting in America for all people, expanding the franchise, which has been our history in our nation, also a part of the commission inside the Biden-Harris administration, also certainly be a part of the forthcoming campaign by Kamala Harris, again, just begun today, a little bit yesterday as well, as she moves toward the nomination for the Democratic nomination for the presidency in Chicago in just a couple of short weeks. Also a part of her commission today on the Maggie Dawn Show, talking all about the Biden-Harris top 100, the issues, the advocacies, would include very near, if not at the top of the list, the notion of voting rights and the important notion that voting rights are thresholds to all of the other issues. It's where all of our elected officials come from. It is even where our appointed officials come from, because the appointments come from those who are elected. All of that, a part of the Biden-Harris administration, the commission going forward. Spent a lot of time in our first hour talking about what the Wisconsin Supreme Court has done to further extend that franchise, bringing drop boxes back into our anticipated history here on August 13th and also November 5th, reversing what the Supreme Court in the state of Wisconsin did a couple of years ago, and also talking about this long and gradual movement toward a greater franchise here in the United States and in Wisconsin that was ultimately halted in many ways by the United States Supreme Court. And so we're going to talk in this hour about two major cases that affected dramatically all that we've talked about up to this point. And then we're also going to talk about the commission given us by the Biden-Harris administration to push back on that, the proposed fixes to that, the ways in which in the future, the years of America yet to come, restoring some of those rights and opportunities taken away by the United States Supreme Court, what is in our future, the positive things yet to come. Part of the positive expression here on the Maggie Dawn Show, as it is every day, today also, are your calls, your questions, your inquiries at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. That includes you in this all-important discussion today about voting rights on the Biden-Harris 100. And we do have a caller from Prairie du Sac. Mark, delighted to have you with me once again today on this Monday afternoon. Your comment, your question, your inquiry about our voting rights analysis and focus today on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thanks so much, Jim. Could President Biden, under executive order, and given the expanded powers that the president apparently has, that under his powers by executive order, enforced provisions in Amendments 14, 15, 19, 24, and 26, which you've talked about already, and say that I, as part of his obligations as president of the United States, to preserve and defend the Constitution of the United States, make sure that the law is faithfully executed by executive order, John Lewis Act is now in effect, and that's what it's going to be, and that people are going to have the right to vote, because the 14th Amendment points out that the right to vote is denied or anyway abridged.
We can
put that in there, because by amendment, I mean, we've expanded the franchise to include all citizens over the age of 18 and over, so that could he just do that by executive order and say, this is the way it's going to be, and then use that newfound presidential power
that the Supreme
Court apparently has given him to say, this is the way it's going to be, Jackson. If you don't like it, you're going to spend some time in a crow cage.
Right, exactly.
Not literally, but virtually.
Right,
but,
absolutely. Wonderful thoughts, Mark. Wonderful, not just ideas, not just rhetorical thoughts about things could happen. We know in the wake of this case, this Trump versus United States case, that putting aside, which is a lot to put aside, the criminal aspects of that and the ways in which the Supreme Court basically clipped the wings of Jack Smith in that case as that goes forward in the District of Columbia, also all of that predicated on exactly what you're describing, Mark, which is this very vital, this very muscular, this powerful, this very depth of executive branch that has got to have the authority to do things energetically. That's all a part of what Chief Justice John Roberts wrote about that justifies in that order, otherwise outrageous and completely contrary to 248 years of our history. He begins with this long, long exposition about a very powerful executive branch. And so, Mark, taking up your recommendation to Joe Biden, our president, and continuing to be our president through January 20th of 2025, executive orders. Have presidents done things when the Congress has not acted in the past? Absolutely. Have presidents done things when the Constitution needs to be executed? You talked about executing the laws. There's also the take care clause in the Constitution to take care that the laws of the United States are properly enforced. That's the executive branch, as Mark, you have implicitly said today. Could he do that? Why not? Why not? Why not give that a shot? Why not do those kinds of things that, frankly, the most dramatic executive order of all time, Abraham Lincoln effectively amended the Constitution by writing a piece of paper, the ultimate executive order, freeing slaves in America, changing the history of our nation, changing the Constitution that previously had labeled blacks in America as two-thirds of a human being. He changed that with a stroke of a pen. That's an executive order. Other presidents have done this. Of course, we know as well that many of these executive orders have been challenged in court. And presumably, if Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, when she becomes the president, issues an executive order when the Congress does not act or when, in some ways, the law is not being properly enforced according to our constitutional laws, can they do that? Sure they can. Will they be challenged, perhaps, in the federal and maybe even the state courts? Yes, they will. That's a part of our process as well. And then we get judges to determine whether or not that's inconsistent or consistent with the authorities vested in the presidency. And again, getting back to the point you just made, Mark, now we know that the president has huge powers, right? And we understand fully, according to the Chief Justice and a majority of the members of the present Supreme Court, that those kinds of powers apparently have always been there. They have just not been identified as clearly as they were on July 1 of 2024. Why not do that? Why not seek to enforce all of these things, especially when it comes, and you more than hinted at it, Mark, especially as it focuses upon the things that the United States Supreme Court has done in the wake of all of this wonderful moving forward history, now to try to turn back time. Let's talk about Shelby County versus Holder. Let's talk about Vernovich versus Democratic National Committee. And then we will talk, I promise, the positive movement, the commission on the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris top 100 initiatives, the commission for the next presidency of these United States to effect those fixes. And if they are not legislative, exploring this opportunity, this option that, Mark, you just articulated, to issue executive orders to do what the Congress has not done, to overcome what the United States Supreme Court has done to restrict the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So here is the dark part of this history. In the wake of all of this forward-looking movement when it comes to the franchise, in 2013, Shelby County versus Holder, landmark decision, undeniably iconic, Supreme Court of the United States of America, affecting the constitutionality of two fundamental provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. I hinted at them in this movement of all of the history of this when we were describing what happened in the Voting Rights Act. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, again, enacted by an overwhelming members of Congress, both sides of the political aisle, signed by President Lyndon Johnson, becomes the law of the country. And for all that period of time between 1965 and 2013, one of the major enforcement mechanisms, as I also described in our first hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show, one of the basic mechanisms for ensuring the Voting Rights Act is enforced is identifying those jurisdictions in the South, to be sure, but not exclusively in the South. They're all around the country. Some of them are in New York State, some in California, other places around the country, could be a state, could be a county, could be a municipality, that have established an historical record, a demonstrable, provable record,
known by the Department of Justice, sometimes known by courts as well, that say that this is an area, these are government people in these areas who have discriminated based upon, and you fill in the blank, based upon race, based upon sexual orientation, based upon, heaven forbid, poll taxes, literacy taxes, based upon abilities and disabilities, based upon heritage, based upon familial status, all those kinds of things protected by the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, passed at that time, requires those states to obtain federal, what's called preclearance before implementing any changes to the voting rights laws or practices in those jurisdictions. And then there's a subsection 4, and that contains a coverage formula that determines which jurisdictions fall inside this category of bad actors, those that are subject to this preclearance requirement based on their histories of racial discrimination in voting. Can be established. We know who they are. They were identified specifically in the legislation, and indeed, that is how the legislation was implemented over time. And what happens in particular is that the Supreme Court, under the pen of John Roberts, turns all that back. By a 5-4 vote, Section 4B is unconstitutional, he says, because this coverage formula identifying which jurisdictions are covered, which jurisdictions are not, who has to get the preclearance of the voting rights section of Maine Justice, the people who are there, who will sometimes approve and sometimes disapprove proposed changes, those kinds of things, the clearance formula, the coverage formula, based upon data over 40 years old, Chief Justice says, and says as a result of that, because it's old, it's no longer responsive to the current needs, contemporary interests, and therefore an impermissible burden on the constitutional principles of federalism and equal sovereignty of the states. That's what the Chief Justice said in 2013. When the Maggie Dawn Show continues, we'll talk more about Shelby County versus Holder, and we will talk in particular about the impact of Shelby County versus Holder letting loose all of these jurisdictions to do what they want, no longer any requirement for preclearance, and changing once again to the bad, the history of voting rights in America, as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on Civic Media.
Explain that, because my voters don't get it.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name, Jim Santel, here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, talking all things voting today, all things elections today. When we observe today this major event in the history of our nation, Kamala Harris almost certainly becoming the nominee of the Democratic Party to become the next president of the United States of America, taking up and continuing the legacy established by Joe Biden during not only his term as the president of the United States of America, but all those years in the United States Senate representing Delaware, but also representing all of us as a senator of the United States of America, and also serving as the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, a post from which he was a great advocate, continues to be a great advocate for the rights to vote and those anti-voting bills and pieces of legislation of recent times, an advocate of overturning those and restoring basic voting rights in America. All that a part of the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris top 10 initiatives and advocacies involving voting. Shelby County versus Holder. The Holder in that, of course, is former Attorney General Eric Holder, my boss when I was U.S. Attorney in eastern Wisconsin. Eric Holder, again, a great advocate at that time, of course, serving for President Barack Obama, also a tremendous advocate for voting rights in America. He is named in that lawsuit because what happens is this particular county in mid-state Alabama says, you know what,
we don't like the Voting Rights Act anymore after all these years. We don't want to be held to this requirement, even though we are among those jurisdictions that have this history of engaging in discrimination. We don't want to do that anymore. We're going to sue the government, including, obviously, the Attorney General and the Department of Justice generally. And we're going to say that that clearance process, that pre-clearance process, and in particular, the coverage formula that includes us among the bad actors is no longer current. Can't be used anymore. It's unconstitutional because it is outdated. Files this lawsuit, and in this so-called covered jurisdiction of Alabama, sues the U.S. Attorney General District Court in the District of Columbia, seeking a declaratory judgment. That's basically an order from the court saying that Sections 4 and 5 of the Voting Rights Act, these key pieces of the Voting Rights Act in place for decades, no longer legal, no longer lawful, no longer constitutional. Initially, Judge John Bates upholds those provisions, says, no. Congress has said for a long period of time, has re-upped the Voting Rights Act, as we noted. There's nothing wrong with that. And it goes up to the Court of Appeals, the D.C. Court of Appeals, May 18th, 2012. The appellate court there in the District of Columbia likewise affirms the lower court's ruling, says nothing wrong here. Shelby County, you are wrong in contesting the Voting Rights Act provisions that require you to get clearance. If you want to make changes in your voting practices and procedures that could be approved, may not be approved, but they've got to get cleared to ensure that there are no further violations of our basic rights to vote. Supreme Court grants what's called cert to review the case. That means we're going to take this case up. On the limited question of whether Congress's decision in 2006 to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act, and in particular Section 5, under the existing coverage formula, Section 5, Section 4, exceeded its authority under the 14th and 15th Amendments, and thus violated the 10th Amendment, and indeed Article 4 of the United States Constitution. An awful lot to unpack there. The upshot is that the Supreme Court hears oral argument, taking this seriously, about whether or not these provisions that have protected governments, our government generally, the people of the United States of America, and ensured that the government is in fact responsive to populations, takes that up, determines whether or not this pre-existing, long-existing coverage formula is constitutional. And during the course of that oral argument indicates that probably, they're going to find for Shelby County. Supreme Court strikes down Section 4B as unconstitutional June 25th, 2013. Again, you're thinking, gosh, June, once again, a date when the Supreme Court issues many of these cases. Indeed, it does. The big ticket items, they always come out in June. In this case, finding this major enforcement mechanism signed by Lyndon Johnson, passed by a majority members of the Congress, overwhelmingly approved by all sides of the political aisle back then, is unconstitutional. 4B, the court says, exceeded the congressional power to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments. The reasoning there that the coverage formula conflicts with the constitutional principles of federalism and equal sovereignty of the state. Well, what does that mean in particular? The court goes on to say, and again, this is written by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The disparate impact of the states is based upon 40-year-old facts having no logical relationship to the present day. That's what the Supreme Court says in 2013, thus not responsive to current needs. The court holds that since the coverage formula was last modified in 1975, the country has changed. We've moved on. We've got a better nation here. And while any racial discrimination voting, they say, is too much, Congress has to ensure that the legislation it passes to remedy that problem speaks to current, present conditions. And so the things that were passed in 1975, the coverage formula at that time, outdated. We are beyond that. Go back and either do it again. But for now, that coverage formula, Section 4 and Section 5, unreasonable, unlawful, unconstitutional. The act, Chief Justice Roberts says, immensely successfully acknowledges that redressing racial discrimination and integrating the voting process, indeed it does. And he notes along the way that the U.S. has made great progress since 1965. Not perfect, obviously, we know that as well, but great progress thanks to the act. But he adds this. He says if Congress had started from scratch in 2006, it plainly could not have enacted the present coverage formula. And according to him and a majority of the court at the time, regardless of how to look at the record, no one can fairly say that it shows anything approaching the pervasive, flagrant, widespread, and rampant discrimination that faced Congress in 1965. And that, the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice says, clearly distinguished the covered jurisdictions from the rest of the nation. That's the basis. That's the basis for finding that this major section that has worked for all these years no longer applies. A concurring opinion in the case says it's Section 5 also unconstitutional. Others also supporting that notion significantly a dissent at that time by whom? Again, joined in by Justices Stephen Breyer, Soto Sotomayor, and Alagan Kagan, but Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, another lion on the court. What does she say? She says that the Congress had sufficient evidence before it to determine the coverage formula remained responsive to current needs. The dissent also acknowledges that discrimination in voting has decreased in the coverage jurisdictions since the Voting Rights Act enactment, but it attributed much of that decrease to the act itself. Indeed, that's exactly the reason why we've got those changes. And here's the best of all. This is what she says. She says this. She says, throwing out the preclearance formula, when it has worked so effectively and is continuing to work to stop discrimination changes, is like throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you are no longer getting wet. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we miss her, do we not? She dissents at that time, but nonetheless, the law changes with Shelby County versus Holder 2013. When we come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show, more discussion of that and another case in which the Supreme Court once again takes up the legitimacy of the enforcement of the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
What's been going on while I've been gone?
Looking from a window above, it's like a story.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santill on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Talking today, our topic is Voting Rights Act, a part of the Biden-Harris 100 advocacies issues taken up by this administration, the next administration as well, under Kamala Harris, talking all about the importance of voting as a threshold to all the other issues, as important as all of those are. Everything comes from voting. And so this administration, Joe Biden, a great advocate while he was in the Congress, certainly as the president of the United States of America, focus upon the importance of the franchise, ensuring that it is extended, maintained, even in the wake of these decisions by the United States Supreme Court, 2013, Shelby County versus Holder, the Chief Justice effectively saying all of that concern that we had about racial discrimination in voting, that's a part of the past. And although we're not completely over that, it is no longer sufficiently compelling, and we're doing pretty well today. That's basically what the Supreme Court majority said. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as only she could do, comes back and says, No. It's exactly because of this law that we've had improvements, and taking down this umbrella while it's still raining is going to get us all wet again. And indeed it does. That's the continuing history here of this dark part of Voting Rights Act, because what happens in the wake of that is unleashed from the requirement to get preclearance from the Department of Justice, those jurisdictions that have this history of voting rights discrimination, unleashed and untethered from that. What do? Jurisdictions around the country almost immediately, within hours of Shelby County, pass laws imposing hurdles of various kinds around the country, not just in the South, around the country, doing things that they could never do before and doing things that they are now untethered from oversight and review, according to Shelby County versus Holder. And that is what produces all of these aberrant and, frankly, contrary to the basic notions of our justice system, our voting systems, all of these laws that restrict the franchise, that's where they come from. In the wake of Shelby County, no longer tethers, no longer restrictions on people who would deny the right to vote, to people of all sorts of immutable characteristics. The Supreme Court isn't done. They're not done. In 2021, 8 years later, they take up the Voting Rights Act yet again in a case called Brnovich versus Democratic National Committee. Brnovich is the attorney general. That's his name in the state of Arizona. And that's where this case comes from. It's another major Voting Rights Act case. And it also implicitly and explicitly limits the capacity under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act to be enforced by the Department of Justice. How do we get there? Again, we know what the Voting Rights Act of 1965 does. This particular challenge, again, the way that we get to the diminution of the impact of Section 2, which basically says that the jurisdictions have got to be forthright and they've got to be broad in ensuring that voting is extended to all sorts of people. The case comes up out of Arizona. And what happens, again, in the wake of Shelby County no longer needing to get preclearance, the legislature there enacts two policies in Arizona, and both of them, again, in the wake of Shelby County. One was that the particular preclearance statements, requirements, no longer apply, and so a so-called out-of-precinct policy, get back to that, an out-of-precinct policy from 1970 is resurrected, and it requires there in Arizona that election officials reject ballots placed by voters that vote in the wrong precinct. And includes their votes for state and federal office. In other words, if you go to the wrong place and you vote otherwise legitimately, you're registered to vote, you can vote, and you do that, but you're in the wrong place, that vote gets thrown out. That new law that was passed in Arizona is HB 2023, makes it a felony for anyone also other than an election official or a family member or a caregiver to handle or collect a completed early voting or absentee ballot. Now, what does that mean? It basically means if you've put together an absentee, an early ballot, you yourself have got to deliver that to the polling place. You can't have somebody like another person gather those up. The law thus banned what's called ballot collection, a practice sometimes inappropriately, I hate this phrase, called ballot harvesting, suggesting that somehow there's something illegal going on here. And the governor signs both of those, basically this out-of-precinct place where you go to the wrong precinct and you vote, your vote gets thrown out, otherwise legitimate because you went to the wrong spot. And second, oh, by the way, if you had your neighbor deliver your particular ballot to the particular voting place, that's also thrown out. Only you can do that. Now, again, in the state of Arizona, both of those hugely important, right? Because of the expanse of the geography there, you have an awful lot of Native American, indigenous population reservations there. It travels hundreds of miles, maybe, to get to the appropriate polling place. Makes it very difficult to vote if indeed you cannot rely upon a neighbor to deliver your otherwise legitimate ballot. And also, if you happen to go to the wrong voting spot, probably can't get to the right voting spot in time, right? So both of those plainly intended to disenfranchise probably in Arizona, people of our Native American populations, our indigenous populations there, and others meant to deny them the right to vote. Now, what happens, of course, is this comes up. It gets challenged again by the Democratic National Committee, thus the name of the case, Brnovich versus DNC, comes up to the Ninth Circuit, ultimately after some machinations there. Ninth Circuit says, no, you can't do that. It is in violation of Section 2. States have got to ensure that voting access is protected. This doesn't do that. Both of these standards, both of these new policies are turned back. And then it gets to the Supreme Court. Comes up to the Supreme Court, oral arguments, March 2nd of 2021. And in the wake of that, a 6-3 decision on July 1, 2021. 2021, just recently, 6-3 decision reverses the Ninth Circuit, and the court basically is saying that neither the out-of-precinct policy or the HB 2023, this so-called harvesting process, neither one of them violates Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And as a result of that, all of that is okay. New standards under Section 2 that permits those kinds of restrictions in a majority opinion written by Sam Alito, joined by the Chief Justice, and joined by, yes, that's right, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, all of them saying all of that is just fine. No problems in doing either one of those things. Now, needless to say, The dissent is quite vociferous as well. Elena Kagan, a 41-page dissenting opinion, joined by Justices Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor. Kagan writes this. She says, the court has no right to remake Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Maybe some think, she says, that voter suppression is a relic of history. She's talking there, of course, about the not only about Shelby County, but also about what's going on here. And so the need for a potent Section 2 has come and gone. But Congress gets to make that call. It's the legislature, she says, that has to decide this, not the United States Supreme Court. She writes this. She says, what is tragic here is that the court has yet again rewritten in order to weaken a statute that stands as a monument to America's greatness and protects against its basest impulses. What is tragic, she goes on to write, is that the court has damaged a statute designed to bring about the end of discrimination in voting. And yet, Brnovich's law today, Section 2 diminished in its force, making it much more difficult for the Department of Justice, U.S. attorneys' offices around the country, including there in Arizona, to enforce the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Now, the good news that comes out of this, of course, is we've got some fixes to all of this, and that's where Joe Biden and Kamala Harris come in. That's their top 100 here on the Maggie Dawn Show, their commitment to voting rights, and the kinds of things that are all about the future of America. We're going to talk more about that, in particular, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. It's had various names in different Congresses, all supported by Kamala Harris, all supported vociferously by our present president, Joe Biden, in an attempt to overturn, to fix Shelby County, to reinstate Section 4 and 5, to reinvigorate Section 2. There are things that the legislature can do, and that is what Joe Biden has been advocating for the past 3.5 years. That's what Kamala Harris is also talking about today. In the past, the present, the future as well, great advocates for voting rights in America and doing these fixes, all of that a part of the future of America, what should indeed happen. Part of this discussion, of course, as well, your callers, your comments, your questions. So much appreciative of callers who are calling in to participate in our discussion this afternoon. Jack from Merrimack, you've been waiting on the line for a while. Delighted to have you with me on the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon.
Thank you. This might sound like Monday morning quarterbacking, but I've been saying since Biden got elected that the court has to be rebalanced and that he should have made that priority one instead of a lot of the other. And don't get me wrong, the legislation that he did get through was useful and necessary, but this is even more important.
Absolutely.
That he should have rebalanced that court because it was packed or stacked, as you will call it, by the Republicans. There's no question on that. The second thing is that his second priority should have been to get the John Lewis Voting Rights Act passed,
right? Yep.
Because we need a federal law that states unequivocally and clearly every adult American citizen has the right to vote, and any law, regulation, or activity that interferes with that right is null, void, and illegal. And that means and includes things like, but is not limited to, egregious gerrymandering,
right,
ridiculously demanding voter ID, atrociously demanding absentee mail-in ballot rules like we have in Wisconsin. A wife cannot even hand in nor legally mail her husband's ballot.
Right.
That's
right.
Ridiculous.
Right. Right.
And I mean, I could go on, on or near site voter suppression tactics, purging tens of thousands at a time from voter rolls. You know, if a voter has to be challenged, then do so, but it must be done individually, and
right,
proof of ineligibility must be shown, just like you have to prove that someone is a criminal in a court of law. And I could go on and on.
Absolutely, right. Right, Jack. And we could go on and on because there are a lot of attempts, again, to undermine the franchise in America in the wake of Shelby County, the wake of Brnovich. The enforcement mechanisms are not nearly as strong as they were before those cases. The Department of Justice, through your support and the people of the United States of America, could do these things to prevent all the kinds of things, Jack, that you've just described. no longer can do those things legally because of these decisions. Now the good news is that Joe Biden has been advocating for the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. He's been presenting that. It's been introduced in every single Congress of his term. And he and Kamala Harris have been doing that. Again, the problem, of course, is votes. It's numbers, right, Jack? You know this as well. You've implicitly, if not explicitly, stated just that. You don't have the numbers to pass this, to do the fixes that previously in 1965 would have been easy to do. Overwhelming Republican and Democratic support, conservative, liberal, however you want to describe it. Everybody was in favor of voting rights, or almost everybody at the time. And what Joe Biden has done, of course, is to continue not only to advocate for the overturning of Shelby County, Brnovich, and again, all the things that flowed from them, but identified specific things that we're going to talk about as well, the Freedom to Vote Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and other initiatives that are just a part of his policies, presumably now also a part of the policies going ahead as the Kamala Harris administration one day in about 6 months from now takes office as well. That work can continue. This can be overturned and can be undone at any time. Requires absolutely legislative action. Still requires, Jack, as you well know, enough numbers in the Congress to do it. But a president with leadership, Joe Biden, has provided that. Kamala Harris should continue to provide that in her term as the president of the United States of America. But your frustration, your expression there, entirely appropriate, as America should be concerned about all of this, even as we celebrate here on the Maggie Dawn Show, the possibilities of the future. And that is what we're going to talk about next, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
All I needed for-
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. Thank you for once again joining me this afternoon as we talk about all things voting and elections in the immediate aftermath of this major development in American history. That is the decision by our current president, such a tremendous supporter of voting rights and elections in America, to conclude his candidacy for the presidency and instead to endorse the candidacy of our Vice President Kamala Harris. Some news coming out of Wisconsin with respect to the endorsement of her by the Democratic Party in the state of Wisconsin. Brian, do we have that information?
Yes, we have a statement from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Ben Wickler just released the following statement. Wisconsin Democrats are united, fired up, and ready to deliver Wisconsin for Vice President Kamala Harris. Already, Vice President Harris has won endorsements from Governor Evers, Tammy Baldwin, and every other statewide elected Democrat, as well as elected Democrats at all levels and grassroots leaders and activists across the state. We've seen record-breaking fundraising, with Wisconsin Democrats raising more than $140,000 in just 24 hours. There's no one better prepared to prosecute the case against Donald Trump than Vice President Harris, and our endorsement makes it official. Wisconsin Democrats are all in for Kamala Harris.
There you have it. Thanks, Brian, for that. That updated report just coming in off the news feeds today about the support. And indeed, that commission, no one better to take up the initiative begun by Joe Biden and his administration and by other administrations prior to his, but certainly his time in Congress. No one better than Kamala Harris now to go forward here in the state of Wisconsin and throughout the United States, advancing all of these things that are important to Americans, including this threshold right to vote and including, as Jack was just advocating, the notion that we need fixes for these laws these cases determined by the Supreme Court that would change the ways in which, once again, the Department of Justice can enforce the Civil Rights Act, and including the Voting Rights Act of 1965. What things are out there? What has Joe Biden, what has Kamala Harris endorsed? What does this all mean? Well, we know that the president has already issued one of those executive orders that we talked about earlier, promoting access to voting, establishing the official policy, promoting voting rights, aiming to do this by implementing a whole of government approach, directing all agencies of the executive branch to encourage, to create, to develop plans to reach voters, including voter registration, voter participation programs, links to the websites, vote.gov. If allowed by law, agencies are to solicit approved nonpartisan organizations and state officials to provide voter registration on agency premises. Agencies directed to promote and expand access to multilingual voter registration. All that a part of the Biden administration policy already. And beyond that, of course, advocacy for legislation that probably only the Congress can do to fix these Supreme Court cases, but also to enforce other things. We've talked about the ways in which Holder, the Shelby versus Holder case, Brnovich implement and fail to implement the true meaning of the Voting Rights Act. Joe Biden, now Kamala Harris, advocating for the fixes. That includes the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. It's had various names over various Congresses, always introduced, most recently introduced as the John Lewis Voting Rights Act Amendment Act of 2023, always introduced in Congress, doesn't get any legs because of obstruction in the House, sometimes in the Senate as well. What does it do? Many, many aspects that do, in fact, turn back Brnovich, turn back the decision in Shelby County. First provision of it turns back Brnovich and strengthens the voter protections in Section 2 that Brnovich attacked and undermined. That's huge. It broadens the scope of the courts when it comes to the U.S. Attorney General being able to once again oversee and provide some clearance to those jurisdictions that have historically engaged in discrimination. It does so by providing some new coverage formulas and specifically addressing the kinds of things that the Supreme Court at the pen of John Roberts didn't like. Says that any state that has 15 or more voting rights violations in the last 25 years, subject to the criteria under the law. Any state that has 10 or more voting rights violations, and at least one of those violations committed by the state itself within the last 25 years. Any subdivision of that state that has 3 or more voting rights violations within the past 25 years, also subject to the preclearance requirement. Basically, doing exactly what the Supreme Court wants the government to do. Update that preclearance formula. There it is. It's in the Voting Rights Act. It's in the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. You can accomplish it. You can turn back Shelby County tomorrow legislatively by accomplishing exactly what has been written into this law. Again, it has been introduced since the 114th Congress, various names introduced in the Congress, introduced in the Senate, and always as a result of opposition. Unlike the support given the Voting Rights Act of 1965, always turn back and never a part of our legislation. We look forward to the positive day, movement forward, when we restore the things that Brnovich and Shelby County took away, and also move forward in further advancing the franchise generally. Joe Biden has also proposed the Freedom to Vote Act that ensures that all residents in all states have access to online registration, same-day registration at the polls. We've got that here in the state of Wisconsin. It would amend the National Voter Registration Act to automatically register eligible people in all states to vote if they complete some sort of preliminary action at the Division of Motor Vehicles. It makes Election Day a federal holiday. Why is that important? It means you can get all people to vote. No reason not to go to the polls to vote. Sets a national minimum standard for the duration of early voting. In other words, you can't restrict the time for early voting, which is also one of the things that's being done in the wake of Shelby County. Sets standard timelines based on evidence for the removal of voters from registration rolls. Exactly the kinds of things that Jack was talking about. We got to restore that as well. The mechanisms, yes, indeed, to review voter registration rolls, but do that in a logical and even balanced way, reestablishes the right to vote for individuals convicted of a felony who've completed their sentence. It would implement protections for poll workers and election officials from partisan influencer control, require states to use paper ballots that can be hand-verified during an audit. All of those things intended to promote voting in America. All of that can be the future of our nation, not only under this administration, not only with a Congress that understands the importance of this, and a new president in 2025 that understands this and proceeds on behalf of the people of the United States of America. My name is Jim Santel. This has been The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media broadcast stations. Have a good afternoon, everybody.
Thank you. Go get him.